Support for this public radio podcast is provided by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. And by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy-efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works.
Wall Street's New Deal.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. J.P. Morgan's enhanced offer for Bear Stearns is going down a whole lot easier than the old one. In Europe today, Bear Stearns was the most traded stock. It's up 80%. Besides a new share price, J.P. Morgan is now on the hook for Bear's first billion in losses instead of the Federal Reserve. But the Fed is still putting up $29 billion to backstop the deal. We're joined by our European correspondent, Stephen Beard. Stephen, stocks are up more than 3% over there. Is it mainly the new Bear Stearns sale price?
Well, I think probably the improved offer for Bear Stearns, the fivefold increase, in fact, in that offer, has encouraged many investors here to believe that America's investment banking crisis may be drawing to a close. Also, yesterday's unexpected rise in U.S. home sales has suggested to some that the U.S. housing market is not in free fall, and therefore the whole crisis over the value of mortgage-backed securities may be drawing to an end.
One thing I'm not quite clear about is, Bear Stearns shareholders will get a few more dollars per share. Why has that caused such a rally in the markets?
I think it has an enormous symbolic importance. Mm-hmm. The shock of Bear Stearns was absolutely huge. Here you had America's fifth largest investment bank, which last year was worth $160 a share. A week ago, suddenly it was being sold off for $2 a share. That was a tremendous shock to confidence. The fact that it can now be rescued at five times that knockdown price. Of course, we're not back into $160 a share territory, right. But it's an improvement in sentiment. It shows that perhaps we are beginning to bottom out.
All right, Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Asia had big gains as well today. The Nikkei climbed 2%. Hong Kong shares were up more than 6%. As for Wall Street, the Dow is at 12,548 after adding 187 points yesterday. The Nasdaq shot up 68 and the S&P 500 climbed 20. The AFL-CIO released a new online survey this morning about health care. More than 26,000 people participated. Almost half said they or a family member stayed in a job just to keep health insurance benefits. And one person without insurance even enlisted in the military to get it. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
Barbara Hobbs never let her son play with guns when he was growing up, so she was shocked when he called and told her he'd joined the National Guard. His wife was sick, and that was the only job he could get with health insurance benefits. His mother says he spent a year in Iraq.
I would think that going to Iraq is a very high price to pay in order for you to get health insurance.
Other people who responded to the AFL-CIO survey kept working past retirement or stayed in dead-end jobs because they offered health insurance. Heather Booth directs the union's new healthcare publicity campaign. She says even the insured have problems.
It's also a question of those who are insured and still can't afford the drug costs, the copays.
A third of the survey respondents said they'd skipped medical care because of the cost. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
The Smashing Pumpkins are suing their record label of 17 years. The band says Virgin Records illegally used the Pumpkins' name and music in a Pepsi promotion with Amazon.com. The lawsuit says Virgin only has permission to sell digital downloads of the band's songs, and that using the Smashing Pumpkins name to sell other things threatens their reputation for artistic integrity. This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, March 25th on Marketplace.org. The merger of the two big satellite radio companies is still a possibility. Yesterday, the Justice Department gave its blessing to Sirius buying XM for $5 billion. It said the deal was unlikely to hurt consumers or lessen competition. Now it's up to the Federal Communications Commission. When the FCC granted Sirius and XM their licenses a decade ago, the FCC said it would stand in the way of a merger between the two. Now that the DVD format war is over, Sony is taking the next step with its Blu-ray discs. Janet Babin reports from our Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
I want my life back.
That's Arnold Schwarzenegger in Sony's sci-fi thriller, The Sixth Day. When it's released next month, the disc will be live, meaning you'll be able to connect to the internet and receive previews and bonus tracks. But you have to have a PlayStation 3 to use the new Sony discs. New Blu-ray players that can connect to the internet to add content won't be available for a few months. James McQuivey with Forrester Research says Sony's playing catch-up.
They've announced it so long ago, it's taken them this long to roll it out. And honestly, anyone who bought a Blu-ray player before now should feel a little burned that their Blu-ray player can't upgrade to any of these capabilities.
McQuivey says in a few years, all our TVs and DVD players will be uploading stuff from the internet by themselves. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Many retailers dream of just getting a sliver of the Chinese market. 1.3 billion people is a lot of potential customers. But when a smaller size company jumps into China without knowing the ropes, a lot of time can be spent fumbling around in the dark. Now these entrepreneurs have a place to turn for advice. Bill Marcus picks up our story from a Hooters restaurant in China.
Welcome to Shanghai Hooters!
When the first Hooters restaurant opened in China, the franchisees had what you might call a cultural problem. Photos in recruitment postcards sent to them by Hooters' main office in Atlanta scared off prospective waitresses.
Their chest sizes were fairly enormous, so we had to use Photoshop and reduce their chest sizes on the postcard.
That's Mike Golden. His four-year-old Shanghai consultancy, AdSmith, tackles delicate issues like this. AdSmith is one of a growing army of consultants catering to small foreign businesses in China. Or, as he puts it,
people looking at the Chinese market and completely missing the point and missing their target customers.
His services start at $3,000 a month. Big consultancies like PricewaterhouseCoopers can charge $10,000 for a retainer. AdSmith's target market is the small entrepreneur. Consultants like Golden handle sourcing, marketing, IT, cross-border employment, and even give tax advice. And if they can't do it, they'll find someone who can. Magic Chung's visainchina.com sets up 24 foreign businesses a month. He's helped purveyors of cosmetics, lighters, and phones.
We're just doing the things under the laws, and we will find some ways to get it.
More than 24 U.S. states and municipalities also help small businesses negotiate entry into China's markets. With its suite of offices in central Shanghai, the state of Maryland has the biggest operation. It funds up to 40 hours free advice for about 70 entrepreneurs a year. More help costs $30 an hour. In 2006, the Maryland Center generated $308 million in business. Consultant Ning Xiao runs the center.
We are a fine distributor for them. We manage that distributorship for them. And we are their China office.
But beware, warns author, historian, and market researcher Paul French.
China being China, of course, and the gold rush mentality here, we have vast numbers of people who call themselves consultants, and what they know about China, of course, is anyone's guess.
French warns most consultants won't tell businesses this fundamental truth. Vast numbers of Chinese still don't make enough money to buy their products. In Shanghai, I'm Bill Marcus for Marketplace.
The housing market got a bit of good news yesterday. Surprisingly robust numbers on existing home sales. We'll see if we can make it two in a row this morning. Lisa Roth explains.
Standard & Poor's puts out the Case-Shiller Index today. It tracks sales of existing homes across several metro areas. The National Association of Realtors put out its numbers yesterday. Sales of existing homes went up nearly 3% in February, the first increase in 6 months. But home prices were lower. Nicholas Ritsinas directs the Joint Center for Housing Studies at Harvard. He says that may be what made buyers start buying again.
The numbers indicate that if price goes down, sales go up.
S&P uses a different technique to calculate its figures, but Ritsina says the outcome should be similar.
I would suspect that that will continue to show some further price softening, price declines in kind of selected markets.
He points out that monthly numbers like these tend to be very volatile, and they're stale almost before they're released. He still thinks we're in for a bleak 2008. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Today we launch a new series of stories called Housing Madness. We'll take a closer look at how the subprime fallout has affected homebuyers, sellers, renters, brokers, all kinds of people. We begin in California with a story from Rachel Dornhelm.
Martha Ann Wishnev has been a realtor for 31 years. She works in Contra Costa County, near San Francisco.
I ordinarily sell about $7.5 million worth of real estate a year. And here it is, it's the beginning of February. I haven't had a sale yet.
In fact, she hasn't been involved in a transaction since October. Around the nation, realtors like Wishnev have seen sales drop 22% over the last year.
You'd think that in a market like this where you're not having that many transactions, it would be less work. But it's much, much more work.
Wishnev says she's busy sending out documents, talking to homeowners associations and potential clients. She says the fact she hasn't sold anything is taking a psychological toll.
In real estate, you don't get a penny until you close the escrow. So you spend a lot of money on advertising, a lot of money taking people around, and you have to remind yourself that you personally are not a failure, that the real estate market is the problem.
Wishnev is lucky. Her husband has a steady salary, and they no longer have monthly expenses to worry about. But she says others must be in agony. She's noticed the energy level drop at her office and empty desks.
What happens is when someone decides to really pack it in, they kind of just disappear. Where did he go? Well, he's gone. What happened? I don't know. It's odd.
Wishnev says she works with a single mother who has turned to tutoring to make ends meet, and a colleague at a nearby firm is considering early retirement after her office shut without warning last week. But Wishnev says she's an optimistic person and has seen bad markets before.
I'm going to try to weather the storm, and I probably will be able to. I've been doing it a long time, so I have a deeper reserve than a lot of people would have.
I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Share your housing stories with us and with other listeners online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.